Well met, and welcome to episode 104 of the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for May the 31st, 2015. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. Greetings. This is Bill Walthall, and in this podcast we conclude, finally, our three-month-long discussion of Hamlet, with a look back at the play, wrapping up with some opinion, a concept, and a casting. When I started rereading this play, years after my last reading and teaching of it, my initial thought was that this is a play about succession, some kind of oblique metaphor for the passing or future passing of Elizabeth. Over the course of these 3 months, though, that melded into a vague concept of what it means to be a king and the how and why of Hamlet never reaching that height. I liked the idea of madness, I just couldn't, and still don't, see the play in any way, shape, or form about real mental illness, at least not so far as Hamlet is concerned. And as I mentioned in the last podcast, and in multiple blog entries, I'm not so sure that Ophelia is mad so much as situationally desperate. Now, as I continue to go over this play, I keep coming back to the same concept. Not madness, but playing madness. Playing at what isn't real. Which is fascinating in the same way that baseball is philosophically interesting. But intrinsically interesting? I'm not so sure. So where do I stand on Hamlet? Look, I'm not going to go all Thomas Stearns on you and call the play an artistic failure. And I'm certainly not going to be Harold Bloom and say this is just the bee's knees. To be honest, I do lean a little more toward the Eliot argument. I find this play maddening. It's got plot holes you could drive a truck through, and if you couldn't get a truck through, you'd still have to avoid the question potholes in the road. Why is Claudius elected? Did Gertrude know about the murder? What was Polonius's role in Claudius's election? Why can Horatio and Marcella see the ghost, but Gertrude can't? Why is Hamlet the only one who can hear the ghost? What's Hamlet's history with Horatio? Rosencrantz and Guildenstern? How ridiculous is the pirate ex machina device that saves Hamlet but allows him to doom our two bumbling courtiers? We have the long, almost laughably long, play within a play. And a comeuppance for Claudius that, for the general population of Denmark at least, doesn't even address his most heinous crime. Even my favorite bits, Ophelia in her flowers and the to be or not to be speech, are fun for me only through wild speculation and possible overinterpretation. And yet, this is a cultural touchstone. It's freaking Hamlet. It gets revived on stage every year and on screen pretty much every decade. But does that make it good? Has it stood the test of time, or gets tested time and time again, only because actors and directors, in acts of either masturbatory or masochistic hubris, or both, feel this need to put their stamp on the puzzle, to try to solve this Rubik's Cube of a play, one that, in my opinion, is rigged for failure, almost as if Shakespeare is playing with us, messing with us, from beyond a 400-year chasm? If Hamlet is a masterpiece, then it's a flawed one. If it is ultimately unsatisfying and, okay, I'll say it, a failure, it's not for lack of ambition. I can see how critics, as self-perpetuating on the page as actors and directors are on the stage, see this play as all things and this character as every man. But I just don't know. For me, he's not every man. He's no man. He's a shell. Either into which we fill what we want to see, and yes, I now see, feel, and get what Eliot was saying, or an enigma who attempts to fill himself only through the concept of artifice, playing, and disguise. He's not mad, nor never will be. Beyond that, I'd argue the only times we see the real Hamlet is when he's alone, but at all other times, he's playing a role. And if that's the case, who is this man who is glimpsed only 7 times in the play? He's a cipher. So we're left with a 4-hour slog through Denmark with a zero as a hero at the center of our play. Well, babies, that just doesn't float my boat. So, as we near the two-thirds mark of our project, where do I rank this behemoth? Well, I rate it third amongst the tragedies thus far, and we've only read four. Sacrilege, I know. And honestly, for me, it only barely beats out Julius Caesar for that place. Sue me. Give me sick and twisted, truly mad Titus over the melancholy fake-crazed Dane any freaking day. I do have the play cracking my top 10 overall at number 8, just edging out that other hallowed acting H, Prince Hal, once he's grown up as Henry V, but not as high as Hal as Hal in Henry IV Part 1, which is still hanging tough at number 6. By the time we're done with the other big four tragedies, Macbeth, Othello, and Lear, how far down the totem pole will Hammy fall? Who knows? But that, my friends, is a question for a later month. For anyone who's followed this project for any amount of time can tell you, as one of my last acts with a play, let's call it my last rites, it's to put together a concept and a cast for a dream production. And it's no different for Hamlet. For me, this is grit, not slick. The look and feel should be as close to historical reality as possible. Brutal, early Christian, stone, rough and tumble world, heavy on stone, echoey, shadowy. My idea is to focus on what I'm seeing more and more in the reading and rereading, that idea of artifice, play, acting in Hamlet. I think to a certain extent, the only time we see the real Hamlet is in soliloquy. Even when he's talking to Horatio, the closest Hamlet has to a confidant in the play, it should be a performance to a certain extent. At the beginning, there may not be trust there. Hamlet asks him the same questions as he later asks Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. And later, his performances for Horatio are to simply get what he wants. And as I mentioned in my blog entry on the speech, you know, the to be or not to be speech, I don't think this is a soliloquy at all. Rather, he's being watched, and more importantly, he's aware that he's being watched. And this concept of spying and listening, I want this pushed to the forefront. I want guards on stage at all times, as if nothing would escape their attention and thus be reported to Claudius. The paranoia should be palpable. And as I write this, maybe this is why Hamlet is acting. It's a coping strategy, a defense mechanism. I see no one as a fool here. Polonius is not, in my mind, a bumbling senile old man, but rather a shrewd political operator. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, too, are not pawns so much as those who want to be of spying service to the king. They're just inexperienced, ill-equipped, and not that good at it. Because the play-acting aspect is central to my theme, I would keep the scene order as it is in the second quarto, with the to-be-or-not-to-be speech in Act 3 rather than Act 2. It's all an act anyway. Also, from the second quarto, I'm taking Hamlet's age nearer to 30 rather than to 20. And for this reason, I would choose as my Dane, in a thematically-based colorblind casting, Michael B. Jordan. At 28, he can play younger, but more importantly, he can handle the hard emotions, as seen in his performance in Fruitvale Station, as well as the lighter moments, as in Friday Night Lights and Chronicle. To a certain extent, I want the dissonance of having an African-American play the Dane symbolize his feelings of being out of place, his otherness, his not belonging, you know, another reason why he must play act, rather than take action. Playing his mother, I would want should-be Oscar winner, Viola Davis. At 49, she's in the right age neighborhood, but more importantly, she has the range and subtlety that allows her to play the ambiguity of her character. Was her marriage to Claudius one of convenience or love? Was she cognizant of the murder? Was she charmed by Claudius, or did she do the charming? On the other end of that relationship, as Claudius, I'd want the slightly younger, at 45, Hugh Jackman. But not Wolverine Hugh Jackman, but rather the Broadway song and dance man. That's not to say I want my Claudius dancing across stage, but I want him to be charming, diplomatic, political, not a military brute. This would be in contrast to the ghost, played by a slightly older, at 51, Sean Bean. Old Hamlet was a warrior, ill-equipped for peacetime rule. See Ned Stark in Game of Thrones. The other major family in the play I would want headed by a politic, but dangerous, John Leguizamo as Polonius. At 51, he's a contemporary of the old king, and just old enough to be more of an advisor to the new one. Leguizamo, for me, has always felt to be the brightest guy in the room, even when he's playing the fool. His son Laertes would be 24-year-old Diego Boneto. Handsome, and with lighter chops honed by Rock of Ages and Pretty Little Liars, he cuts the kind of figure that you could see Polonius needing to spy on. When Laertes returns to Elsinore, he's angry and vengeful, but in way over his head, and thus easy pickings for Claudius. And as Ophelia, 23-year-old Demi Lovato. Though now known mostly as a singer, she's got acting experience and a vulnerability that's palpable. I would cut the script judiciously, but substantially. Think more Kevin Kline's edit than Olivier's. I want there still to be a foreign policy angle. I don't want to lose that, but at the same time, I want this play to pulse with momentum and tempo. If I can't get the script under 2.5 hours, then I would want to play it with 2 intervals. One at the end of Act Two, with Hamlet's epiphany of using the play to catch the conscience of the king, and the other at the end of Act Four, Scene Four, with Hamlet's departure to England. Thoughts be bloody or be nothing worth. This is his last soliloquy in the play. After this, all things are different. In fact, with this division of the play, we as an audience grow more estranged from the prince. In the first third, he has 4 soliloquies. In the second, only 3. And in the final section, he doesn't speak to us, doesn't confide to us, never drops his act at all. He is only a player, and in a sense, only a pawn in fate's game. And that, if anything, for me at least, is Hamlet's tragedy. Now, if you've enjoyed this podcast, but you haven't been following along with our daily blog entries this last week, you've missed out on subjects including stage direction and dialogue, scansion for clues, hitting the pause on Hamlet, the speech, by the numbers, the heart of Hamlet, the play, and Hamlet, the wrap-up. So, if you'd like more in-depth discussions or just want a daily fix, check out the blog entries at thebillshakespeareproject.com or become a fan of our Facebook page or our Twitter feed. Remember that those social media outlets are more for Shakespeare news and notes than for discussion of our current play under study. Also, if you have any question or comment about this or any other Bill Shakespeare Project podcast or blog entry, you can always lob me an email at bill@thebillshakespeareproject.com. And join us again in 2 weeks for our next podcast, when we kick off our discussion of Troilus and Cressida with an intro and a plot synopsis. I hope to see you then. You've been listening to the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for May the 31st, 2015. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. And we shall see thee anon.